It was a year none of the seasons followed their own dictates. The days were warm, and the air hard to breathe without a kerchief, and the nights cold and damp. The wet burlap we nailed over the windows stiff with grit that blew in clouds out of the west amid sounds like a train grinding across the prairie. The moon was orange, or sometimes brown, as big as a planet, the way it is at harvest time, and the sun never more than a smudge, like a light bulb flickering in the socket or a lucifer match burning inside its own smoke. In better times, our family would have been sitting together on the porch in wicker chairs or on the glider with glasses of lemonade and bowls of peach ice cream. My father was looking for work on a pipeline in East Texas. Maybe he would come back one day, or maybe not. Back then, people had a way of walking down a tar road and crossing through a pool of heat and disappearing forever. I ascribed the signs of my mother's mental deterioration to my father's absence and his difficulties with alcohol. She wore out the rug in her bedroom, walking in circles, squeezing her nails into the heels of her hands, talking to herself, her eyes watery with levels of fear and confusion that nobody could dispel. Ordinary people no longer visited our home. As a lawman, grandfather had gone up against the likes of Bill Dalton and John Wesley Hardin, and in 1916, with a group of rogue Texas Rangers, he had helped ambush a train loaded with Pancho Villa's soldiers. The point is, he wasn't given to studying on the complexities of mental illness. That didn't mean he was an ill-natured or entirely uncharitable man, just one who seemed to have a hole in his thinking. He had not been a good father to his children. Through either selfishness or ineptitude, he often left them to their own devices, even when they foundered on the wayside. I had never understood this obvious character defect in him. I sometimes wondered if the blood he had shed had made him incapable of love. He hid behind flippancy and cynicism. He rated all politicians somewhere between mediocre and piss poor. His first wife had a face that could make a freight train turn on a dirt road. WPA stood for We Piddle Around. If he hadn't been a Christian, he would have fired the hired help, we no longer had any, and replaced them with sloths. The local banker had a big nose because the air was free. Who was my grandfather in actuality? I didn't have a clue. It was right at sunset when I looked through the back screen and saw a black automobile, coated with dust and shaped like a shoebox, detour off the road and drive into the woods behind her house. A man wearing a fedora and a white shirt without a tie got out and urinated in front of the headlights. I thought I could hear laughter inside the car. While he relieved himself, he removed his fedora and combed his hair. It was wavy and thick and brown and shiny as polished walnut. His trousers were notched tightly into his ribs, and his cheeks looked like they had been rubbed with soot. These were not uncommon characteristics in the men who drifted here and yon through the American West during the first administration of President Roosevelt. "Some people must have wandered off the highway onto our road," I said. "The driver has taken a leak in front of his headlights. His passengers seem to be enjoying themselves." Grandfather was sitting at the kitchen table, an encyclopedia open in front of him, his reading glasses on his nose. He deliberately stood in front of his headlights to make water, so others could watch. "I can't speak with authority about his thought process since I'm not inside the man's head," I replied. I picked up the German binoculars my uncle had brought back from the trenches and focused them on the car. "There's a woman in the front seat. The second man and another woman are in back. They're passing a bottle around. Are they wets?" I removed the binoculars from my eyes. "If wets drive four-door cars." My first wife had a sense of humor like yours. The only time I ever saw her laugh was when she realized I developed shingles. I focused the binoculars back on the driver. I thought I had seen his face before. I heard Grandfather get up heavily from his chair. He was over 6.5 feet tall, and his ankles were swollen from hypertension and caused him to sway back and forth as though he were on board a ship. Sometimes he used a walking cane, sometimes not. One day he seemed to teeter on the edge of eternity, The next day he was ready to resume his old habits down at the saloon. He had gin roses in his cheeks and skin like a baby's and narrow eyes that were the palest blue I had ever seen. Sometimes his eyes did not go with his face or his voice. The intense light in them could make other men glance away. "Let's take a walk, Satchel Ass," he said. "I wish you wouldn't call me that name. You've got a butt on you like a wash tub." "There's a bullet hole in the rear window of the car," I said, looking through the binoculars again. "My butt doesn't resemble a wash tub. I don't like you talking to me like that, Grandfather." "Wide butts and big hips run in the Holland family. That's just something to keep in mind as you get older. It's a family trait, not an insult. Would you marry a woman who looks like a sack of Irish potatoes?" He pulled open a kitchen drawer and removed a holstered revolver that was wrapped with the belt, the loops stuffed with brass shells. The revolver was the dull color of an old buffalo nickel. It had been converted long ago for cartridges, but the black powder tamping rod was still in place, fitted with a working hinge under the barrel. The top of the holster had been worn smooth and yellow along the edges of the leather. Six tiny notches had been filed along the base of the revolver's grips. Grandfather hung the belt from his shoulder and put on his Stetson. The brim was wilted, the crown sweat-stained a dark gray above the brim. He went out the screen door into the waning twilight. The windmill was ginning furiously, the stanchions trembling with energy, a thread of water coming from the spout, the tank crusted with dirt and dead insects and animal hair along the rims. "The moon looks like it was dipped in a teacup. I can't believe how we used to take the rain for granted," he said. "I think this land must be cursed." The air smelled of ash and dust and creosote and horse and cow manure that feathered in your hand if you picked it up. Dry lightning leaped through the heavens and died like somebody removing an oil lamp from the window of a darkened house. I thought I felt thunder course through the ground under my shoes. "Feel that?" I said, hoping to change Grandfather's mood and my own. "Don't get your hopes up. That's the Katy blowing down the line," he replied. "I'm sorry I made fun of your butt, Satch. I won't do it no more. Walk behind me till we know who's in that car." As we approached the tree line, the driver of the car walked out of the headlights and stood silhouetted against the glare, then got back in his car and started the engine and clanked the transmission into gear. The trees were so dry they made a sound like paper rustling when the wind blew through the canopy. "Hold up there," Grandfather said to the man. I thought the driver would simply motor away, but he didn't. He stuck his elbow out the window and stared straight into our faces, his expression curious rather than alarmed. "You talking to us?" he asked. "You're on my property," Grandfather said. "I thought this was public woods," the driver said. "If there's a posted sign that says otherwise, I didn't see it." The woman next to him was pretty and had strawberry blonde hair and a beret tilted over one eye. She looked like a happy country girl, the kind who works in a dime store or in a cafe where the truckers come in to make innocent talk. She leaned forward and grinned up into Grandfather's face. She silently mouthed the words, "We're sorry." "Did you know you have mud on your license tag?" Grandfather asked the driver. "I'll get right on that," the driver said. "You also have what appears to be a bullet hole in your back window." The driver removed a marble from the ashtray in the dashboard and held it against the light. "I found this on the back seat. It was probably a kid with a slingshot," he said. "I saw a kid up on a train trestle with one." "You a lawman?" "I'm a rancher. The name is Hackberry Holland. You didn't give me yours." "Smith," the driver said. "If you'll tell me your destination, Mr. Smith, maybe I can help you find your way." "Lubbock, or any place there's work. I work on automotives mostly." "Is that an antique firearm?" "A 44 Army Colt. Most of the time I use it for a paperweight. You know automobiles, do you?" "Yes, sir, you could say that. I see automobiles as the future of the country. Henry Ford and me." "Turn left at the paved road and stay due west," Grandfather said. "If you see the Pacific Ocean, that means you passed Lubbock." The man in the back seat rolled down the glass. He was short and not over 120 pounds and wore a suit and tie and a short-brim hat cocked on his brow the way a dandy might. He had a long face like a horse's hanging out of a stall. He also had the kind of lopsided grin you see on stupid people who think they're smarter than you. His breath was as rank as a barrel of spoiled fruit.
"My name is Raymond. This here's my girlfriend, Miss Mary," he said. "We're pleased to make y'all's acquaintance."
The woman sitting next to him had a cleft chin and a broad forehead and a small, mean-spirited Irish mouth. Her face was sunken in the middle like soft wax. She was smoking a cigarette, gazing into the smoke. "There's a busted spar in my cattle guard," Grandfather said. "Don't pop a tire going out. I'd appreciate you not throwing that whiskey bottle in my trees, either."
"Tidy is as tidy does," Raymond said.
Grandfather rested one hand on the bottom of the window. He let his eyes roam over Raymond's face before he spoke. "The man who kills you will rip out your throat before you ever know what hits you," he said. "I'm not talking about myself, just somebody you might meet up the road. The kind of fellow who turns out to be the worst misjudgment you ever made."